I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm delighted to be joined this week by Nick Davey.
Hi, mate, you're right.
And I'm also joined by Guardian writer Richard Foster.
Hi there.
Are you well, Richard?
Yeah, I'm very well, actually. Yeah, looking forward to the next few weeks because it's my sort of Christmas period, really.
So, yeah, to start with, I'll mention, I know we had you on the show last year as well, ahead of the playoffs. You've got a book, The Agony and the Ecstasy, A History of Playoffs, and there's a revised version out this year, I believe.
Yeah, well, what we did was, because it's the 30th anniversary of their introduction, we revised and updated it, because obviously if you write a history and things happen every year, you've got to update it. So the whole book's been updated to make sure that it's all current up to, obviously, 2016. I've done a review of the 2016 playoffs, which were pretty amazing, considering what happened to Barnsley, going from 24th in December to Wembley and promotion in May. I've interviewed Neil Ardley, who, I don't know if you've come across him, is a very astute and bright guy who I think will go a long way. So he told me all about AFC Wimbledon. And I even got a chance to speak to Michael Gray about, as he calls it, that bloody penalty from 1998. And there's a nice story, which I'm going to leave hanging, and you'll have to read the book to find out.
Is the book out? When is it coming out? It's out soon, isn't it, I believe?
Well, today.
Oh, right.
As we Anthony, it is on the bookshelves in Amazon's huge store somewhere in Swindon. It's all out there. Yeah, so very excited about that. New cover. And lots of different bits and pieces. So yeah, no, we're really excited. We think it's going to be hopefully add to the reputation of being the playoffs authority.
I'll put a link in the description. You can also follow you on Twitter as well at RC Foster. So I'll put all that in the description as well. So if people want to follow you or even buy the book, they can do.
Got a Twitter at FL Playoffs, which I'll send you as well. Which I concentrate purely on playoff stuff, which I'll be getting going in the coming days.
Okay. Just as a general question about the playoffs, there's an argument about whether they're fair. Do you think the playoffs are a fair system of promoting sides? You know, like sides which finish third who don't necessarily get promoted, for instance, instead of
I mean, last year was a case in point, because if you think about the three teams that just missed out on promotion. So Brighton were pipped at the end by Middlesbrough on goal difference when they drew 1-1 at the Riverside. Then you had Walsall, who got pipped by Burton Albion in the last day of the season, and possibly even worse, with Accrington Stanley, who were basically promoted going into the 91st minute, and then Bristol Rovers decided to score a very, very late goal, knocked them back into the playoffs, and guess what? All three teams lost their semi-finals. So Brighton were something like 15 points ahead of Sheffield Wednesday, and similar gaps between Walsall and Barnsley, Accrington Stanley and AFC Wimbledon, and all three sides did not get through to even the final, which is the first time that's ever happened, actually, that none of the third place or fourth in the League Two have got through. So that's incredibly unfair. If I was a Brighton / Walsall / Accrington Stanley fan, whatever that would look like, I would be really, really hacked off. But you do have to say, at the start of the season, that they don't say, oh, if you just miss out on goal difference, maybe we'll let you win it. Two go up in Championship League One, three go up in League Two. If you don't make that automatic spot, you may have to face the playoffs. So get over it. You know, it's cruel. It can be. You know, the book is called The Agony and the Ecstasy, and I've been through the odd agony of the playoffs, and it is tough. It is really one of the worst feelings I've ever had is walking out of Wembley in 1996 when Steve Claridge shinned the winner against us in the 120th minute. I've never felt so desolate in my life at a football match. and I've been to 500 matches plus as a fan. Then the following year, of course, we scored a ridiculously wonderful goal through David Hopkins in 1997 after a game that was, quite frankly, about as interesting as watching paint dry. And I felt elated. So there you have the agony of 1996, the ecstasy of 1997. It's just taken me 20 years to write the book, that's all.
Do you think it's a question of, you know, the fairness versus the entertainment factor, because there's a huge... You know, there's a huge buzz around the playoffs. You know, Sky obviously love it because it's loads of TV fixtures and, you know, great viewership.
I think there is an element to that, isn't there? Because those games are, let's face it, that is the football league. I mean, the Football League like it, EFL like it, Sky Bet love it because, you know, this is the showpiece of the lower leagues. Generally, the Premier League will have finished. I know we're a slightly unusual year this year because League One final will be on Saturday week and the Premier League finishes on the following day. But generally, you've got clear water. So the Football League doesn't have to compete with the Premier League. And I know, I mean, I support a team that are currently in the Premier League, hopefully still will be next season. You know, I used to watch the playoffs anyway, even when I didn't even think I was going to be writing a book, because I found them fascinating and I found them captivating. And there's usually at least two or three stories. So last year it was Barnsley and it was AFC Wimbledon that come out of nowhere, and they're just fantastic stories. And yes, you know, football is all about jeopardy. It's all about what you could have won, and then you don't, and then you've got to come back. I mean, the interesting thing is, you look at Brighton, they've lost three of the last four playoff semi-finals, okay? And that, you know, I'm sure they were doubly determined this year to go up automatically because there's no way they want to go into the playoffs again. And they duly got promoted, okay, so they threw away the championship in the last minute with David Stockdale's impression of Brad Guzan. But apart from that, you know, they got promoted and they are in the Premier League for the first time in their history. So, yes, there is an element of unfair, but, you know, life, as we know.
All right, no worries. We'll talk about the championship and we'll come on to the playoffs in a bit. But obviously, as we've mentioned, Brighton failed to win the league. Newcastle got another win on the final day, and it won one fan $60,000 already. He had an accumulator on all the Football League winners and the Scottish League winners. He won $60,000 off a tenner, so I'm sure he's pretty happy that Jack Grealish scored that late goal.
He wouldn't have got many favourable odds on Celtic within the Premier League and Scotland, would he?
He got 3-10, so... yeah.
Right. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Good shout.
But, yeah, thoughts on the season as a whole and Newcastle winning the league?
I think they were the best team, weren't they? I know Brighton, obviously, were up there most of the time, and they were top. Probably more than Newcastle were, but I think Newcastle got a better squad. I think Brighton did amazingly well, and they were quite reliant on one or two players, weren't they? Brighton, Knockhart, I think, is a fabulous player, certainly at that level. I'm not convinced about the depth. I mean, Glenn Murray, who I know very well, because he was at Palace, obviously, and you know, got us up from the championship by scoring 30 odd goals in 2013 season. I don't think he's quick enough for the Premier League, and it proved it when we played in the Premier League the following season. He just wasn't up to it. There is a chasm between the Championship and the Premier League in terms of speed. Dwight Gayle's another example. You know, great player at Championship level, scores goals like anything, but will he do it again in the Premier League? I don't know. Brighton, you know, they were obviously clearly very disappointed. I mean, a terrible way to throw away the Championship, wasn't it? But you know, they got promoted, and they've been, you know, as I said earlier, they've been in lost three or four playoff semi-finals recently, and this is their first time in the Premier League. So disappointing, yeah, for them, but, you know, still an achievement. That's hard for me to say as a Palace fan, but, you know, they're there. And, you know, Brighton, let's face it, they're a smaller club than Newcastle. Newcastle are a massive club. Mm-hmm. They're getting 50,000 in the Championship, which not many people would get, and they sort of deserve to be in the Premier League, not just because of the size of the crowd, but, you know, it's a fantastic ground. They've got great tradition, and they've got a reasonably good squad, and they've got Rafa Benitez. I mean, Rafa Benitez staying with Newcastle in the Championship was a bit stunning to me. I just thought he'd definitely be off. But the fact he stuck around, he took them up, I must say, well done, Rafa, and well done, Newcastle.
Yeah, I was at Villa Park on Sunday. I mean, it was heartbreak. I mean, I'll be kidding him. I said it wasn't, but it was different heartbreak to the ones the year before we suffered at Middlesbrough. It was, as I say, it wasn't to be. Simple as we played very well throughout the whole of the season, but the performances over the last three games just haven't been what we're capable of. And in the end, that's cost us the title. As I say, we're not going to lose too much sleep over it, because at the end of the day, we've achieved everything we wanted to achieve in this division. We're a Premier League club. It's something I've dreamt about since I was a little boy. As I say, it's made so many people from a Brighton persuasion happy. So we'd like to win the league for a cherry on top, but it won't dampen the spirits around Sussex, and we'll look forward to our promotion parade on Sunday. As for Newcastle, yeah, fair play. I mean, it was always going to be either Newcastle or ourselves. Thinking back on it now, we can say it now, the season's over. Realistically, it was always going to be Newcastle or Brighton for the title. And Newcastle have proven that with their huge, obviously, resources, that it's paid off for them.
Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot to play for in the playoff battle. Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield and Fulham all made the playoffs, as we expected, but we'll come on to them in a bit. But at the bottom of the table, there was drama, because all three sides, which could have went down, joining Wigan and Rotherham, in Blackburn, Forest and Birmingham, all won. We'll start with Blackburn. I saw that Tony Mowbray's got the full support of Venkis despite the side going down. Do you think Blackburn will be the sort of side who can go straight back up, or do you think they're gonna struggle in League One next year?
I think if you've got the support of the Venkis, they're in a bit of trouble, quite frankly. it just depends if Mowbray stays. You know, the post match stuff, I've been really convinced that he's going to hang around. I think he did a fantastic job. They got 22 points in 15 matches when he was in charge. If he'd replicate that throughout the season, he'd be on the edge of the playoffs, pretty much. So I did feel sorry for them. You know, obviously, the players they've got some decent players. I mean, Mulgrew's goal was pretty special. I don't know, will they hang on to them? I found this stat about them, that in the last four transfer windows, they have spent £250,000. £250,000 in four transfer windows. In that, over that period, they have generated sales of around 30 million. Gested for 7, Duffy for 4, Kearney for 3, Rhodes for 8, Handy for 5. That's not a club that's going with.
Yeah.
That is a club that is going backwards. And I think it's ironic that Blackburn went down, Coventry went down, Orient went down. All three of them are run by owners that no one would wish on their worst enemy. Yeah. So that's my view on Blackburn.
Since Tony Mowbray, since he's come in, he's done a great job there. And it was always going to be very, very, very difficult given the position they were in. And to be fair, I'm pretty impressed he's actually managed to take his ticket to the final day and ticket to the final second, really. And that's not, it's hard. It's always hard to leave now by goal difference, but it could have been there. All they've got to look about is all the one more point would have done it. But as I say, I think since he's come in, he's done a great job with Blackburn. If he can really concentrate on getting a good squad together for League One, they're all right. Whether they will come up, I don't know. But certainly they can keep a lot of them. They can keep the squad together. They can keep Mowbray. If he can recruit correctly, they've got a great chance.
With Richard touched on the point of owners, over at Nottingham Forest, who just stayed up with their last day win over Ipswich, I saw that Evangelos Mariankis, I hope that's probably pronounced something right, 99% takeover complete. I know the EFL are assessing it, but I guess it's what you've said, and with this, the EFL assessing it, how much, you know, how strict it should be, the, you know, the checks, the fit and proper persons test and all that.
Well, I mean, it's not just Blackburn, Coventry and Orient. You could take about half a dozen clubs and say, are the people who are running these clubs really fit and proper? I think there's a big issue here, and I think you take responsibility, because it's been very, very distressing to watch some of these clubs. I I mean, Charlton are another example of, I'm not quite sure what Du Châtelet gets out of running Charlton, because he's never there. He just seems to run the club from Belgium. He's got that chief exec who, you know, I'll leave that to Charlton fans to suggest what she's like. I just don't get it. They're not making money. They're just not really investing anything. They're just, and the fans are being disenfranchised. The fans are obviously protesting, and Charlton are doing it probably more imaginatively than anybody else. But there is a whole series of clubs that are in the hands of owners who don't care about the football club. The football club should be half the community. It should be something that's a positive thing. Most of those football clubs are negative because the people have turned against it and they don't like it. You know, Charlton's a perfect example. Coventry's another one with the Sissu ownership. And look at Orient. My Lord. I felt so sorry for the Orient fans. That man has absolutely ruined that club.
It just begs the question to me about whether there should be stricter regulation.
Well, exactly, yeah. But they should be informed. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're at the moment.
The other side, Harry Redknapp kept Birmingham up with their win on the last day. He said he might stay at the club if they can match his ambitions. Again, another club that's run really well. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, well, they've been given a 1 year deal by Birmingham, I've just seen. Who knows? But certainly, I don't think the Birmingham fans will mind too much with him coming in. He's a very experienced manager in the club. If he said he can get the correct players in, then hopefully he can build on from what Gary Rowett did. At the club, I don't think they'll be too strong next season, but they certainly won't want to be anywhere near that relegation zone again, that's for sure.
Quite a desperate move, I think. Obviously his over didn't work out at all. And you know, where they, when Rowett was seventh, weren't they? And they were just, you know, they were tanking it. You know, it's the usual new manager bounce. It's sort of almost irrelevant who the manager is. You usually get some sort of stimulus to the side because they're under new management. They need to prove themselves, I think, some of the players. Will he stick around? Yeah, I mean, he will need to be able to dictate terms. Whether Birmingham do that, I don't know. I think they were very fortunate, considering what happened the previous week with the Huddersfield team. I'm not blaming Wagner at all. He had to look after his players. He keeps them fresh. I don't have an issue with that. And I think Mowbray's comments were a little bit out of order, talking about them and then the integrity of the competition. But, yeah, I mean, if he gets the wherewithal and the funds, then maybe Redknapp will stay. But I would say probably he won't get what he needs and he'll go.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll move on to discuss League Two. Portsmouth won the league on the last day because... Plymouth only drew their game and Doncaster lost for the fourth game in a row. Big win with 6-1, and I'm sure that'll bring a bit of joy to the fans after the, you know, as we've said before about clubs being run badly. I guess Portsmouth's a, you know, another great example of that.
Well, the interesting thing is Portsmouth were run incredibly badly by a series of owners who didn't have much idea and also didn't seem to care about the club.
Mm-hmm.
And they went into administration, was it three times in the space of 10 years or something? And you know, ended up in League Two, having been a fairly established Premier League side, you know, and they in the FA Cup as well. So this gives everyone hope. So the Orient fans who are despairing, the Coventry fans are despairing, Portsmouth is now a supporter-owned club. So they've turned it round, they've got it out of administration, and they're doing a fantastic job. And Portsmouth are again. They're a club that shouldn't be at League Two. They shouldn't actually be in League One. They should be much higher up.
Mm-hmm. And there's
you know, I know a couple of Portsmouth fans, and they're absolutely, totally dedicated to this project. You know, and I think it's a fantastic project. And I say that is what the people at Coventry, Orient, and across the land have got owners that don't care. Aim for that. Try and get that movement going, and hopefully you'll be able to bounce back. And I think Portsmouth may well come all the way back up again.
And there's talk at Portsmouth that is it Michael Eisner, who worked at Disney, might be taking over the club as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would go against the fan owner.
Americans, I don't know. Again, I don't know how committed they are. I think they look at it more as a branding exercise, some of them. But yeah, he'll probably, if he takes over, he'll put money in. So that would be helpful.
Yeah, well, just a fantastic day for the football club, and one well-deserved, and well-deserved day for the club as well. And as I say, you can have all your bad times, or bad, but those days that it would, that were just all the fans that were on their knees, basically, when the club was all going through all sorts of problems. It's a well-deserved moment for them, and everyone connects to that football club. And also, well, even Plymouth as well. Plymouth have been through very dodgy times themselves. And so, fantastic. Obviously, they would like to win the league themselves, but they're still going up along with Doncaster. So, but no good thoughts, and a fantastic day all round, and couldn't be more deserved for a good football club. And like Richard said, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they're one of the favourites to go up next year from League One. The squad they've got some very good players there. I think they'll if they can get a few more additions in, I think they'll be absolutely right up there at the top end of the table next season.
Mm-hmm. And at the bottom of the table, Leyton Orient finished bottom, losing their final game of the season 3-1 to Blackpool. There was a big protest. Both sets of fans marched together against the owners, and as we discussed on the show last week, the EFL limited the tickets, said that limited tickets were to be sold to the away fans to try and stop all the protesting. Joining them were Hartlepool, who won their final game 2-1, but they stay in the relegation zone, as Newport also won on the final day. What do you think of the sides who've gone down, Hartlepool and Leyton Orient, Richard?
I think Orient are in a lot of trouble, and they need to be sort of almost like a Phoenix club. I mean, they may still go out of business, which is a worry, because the Shet is not going to do much about that, I don't think. Hartlepool, I mean, it was, I don't know if you saw it, but it was absolutely one of the worst things I've ever seen, is when Jeff Stelling's going through on Soccer Saturday, and the man was clearly completely distraught. You know, he's a Hartlepool man through, and, you know, I know he got Dave Jones sacked in a way, but he was literally, you know what he's like, he's normally very effervescent and quite funny, and he was gone. And you know, Hartlepool have been a league club for a long time, and it's always sad. Hats off to Newport, though, because they were gone. I mean, I can't quite believe how he turned it around, but he did a fantastic job then, and great for Newport, not so great for Hartlepool. And as I say, I'm really worried that Orient might disappear off the face of the earth and have to start again.
As I say, it's a shame that Hartlepool, but we said on the show countless times then that they saw the slide coming. They saw Newport creeping up. They should have made the decision sooner. They left it too late, and in the end, it's cost them. Which is a shame. So they put in a touch of it. It's great to see what I know they played some football. Really turned up the last day. But when you're in a situation where you have to rely on other results, it can easily go against you, and it certainly did. And not taking away from Newport, because, might as I say, Flynn's done an absolutely superb job since coming in from Graham Wesley, and I see he's been offered the job as well, and it can be more deserved. Tremendous job to keep him up against the odds. All credit to the club.
All right, so from there we'll move on to the to discuss the playoffs. If we start with the Championship, the four sides are Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield and Fulham. Despite finishing sixth, I saw that Fulham are currently the favourites, and Scott Malone says he thinks that they're favourites because of the momentum and keeping the same side together, whereas, you know, the likes of Huddersfield and Reading have changed their side around in the final few weeks. Do you think Fulham are rightly favourites, Richard?
Yeah, I've seen them a couple of times on television, and I've met a tip. They play attacking, vibrant football. Boys, Fignon is going to be an absolute star. He's only 16. And the other right back, Rodriguez, he's a great player. And they just play great football. The interesting thing is, I think their goal difference is something like plus 27, which is far better than any of the other teams where they finished sixth. And Huddersfield got a negative goal difference of minus 3, which doesn't happen that often. In fact, I can tell Nick that the last time, I think, a side went into the Championship playoffs with a negative goal difference, it was Old Brighton, and many, many years ago in the 90s. So,
good stat.
Fulham are a very, very credible team, and it seems a bit odd that they've been made favourites, but their record at playoffs is, how do we put this, pretty abysmal. So they were in the playoffs in 1989, and they lost on aggregate 5 nil to Bristol Rovers, including losing 4-0 at Craven Cottage, where they even allowed Ian Holloway to score a goal. And then they lost to Grimsby in 1998, I think it was. And that was a team with Beardsley in it. And he scored, in fact. But they lost 2-1 on aggregate to Grimsby. So they've lost 3, drawn 1 of their playoff games. Not sure if that's relevant, but that's their history. But I think this current side looked good. And I think Jokanović has done a pretty incredible job, because they weren't that great last season. They only just about survived. It's interesting, it was my publisher, Dave Hartrick, who's another Brighton fan, and he told me that he thought Fulham were the best team that they played this season, even though Brighton won 5-1 at the Amex. He said it was a very unjust score. And then at Craven Cottage, Fulham missed a penalty at a crucial period, and I think Brighton ended up winning 2-1 with it. And someone told me that Fulham missed 9 penalties, which is a pretty poor record. So I hope he doesn't go to penalty shootout for those guys.
I think they're my favourites with the more quality they've got going forward. I think they'll definitely do it. All sides have got a good shout in there. But it's strange, because Reading have come third. Yeah, they're the ones I don't really think will do it. And the same with Fulham, obviously they've come sixth, and I think they're my favourites to do it. So it's funny how it all works out for us.
Isn't that possibly down to the style of play? Because Fulham play is quite vibrant.
Yeah.
Whereas this possession based, let's pass it around, let's kill them, let's bore them to death type football.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think that's what it could be. Absolutely.
I guess the other point you'd raise as well is there's only a 5-point difference between the four sides, so they've all finished relatively close together. It's not like one's finished.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so moving on to League One, we've had the semi-finals already. Bradford beating Fleetwood 1-0 over the two legs, and Steve Morrison scoring twice for Millwall as they won the second leg of their game 3-2 after a 0-0 draw in the first game. So the final coming up in 10 days is Bradford versus Millwall. It's basically 50-50 when I looked at the odds earlier. Who do you see winning, Richard?
It's very difficult to call, isn't it? I mean, obviously, Millwall played Bradford in the playoffs last year, beat them in the semi-final. I think they won 3-1 at Bowdray, then drew at Den, but then they lost to Barnsley. It's interesting, actually, when you look at the history of teams that lose in the final. There have been 8 teams that have lost a final, playoff final, and then come back and won it the following year. And Millwall, in fact, did exactly that. So they lost to Scunthorpe in 2009, I think it was, and then next year they beat Swindon in the final. And so 8 teams have done that, and I think there is something about these teams that go through because of the playoffs, and they go, right, we know exactly how to do this, and that experience can help them. So I'm sort of siding with this, or I've got to admit, I don't watch a lot of League One football. I catch a little bit now and again, and Bradford seems to be a very disciplined side. That guy Marshall seems to be a good player on the left wing. I saw him a little bit against Fleetwood, and he put in about 3 or 4 great crosses. Didn't lead to a goal. But, I'm going to favour Millwall. I think they'll right the wrongs of last year against Barnsley. Because I think they've got goal scorers as well. Because obviously Morrison and Gregory, probably the better goal scorers.
Yeah, I agree. Not just because of my friends and all supporters, but no, I'm going to go for Millwall as well. I think, as you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think they'll bounce back from the heartbreak at Wembley last year. I think they've improved as a football club this season. We've seen that in the cup runs. I think they'll turn up for the big games this season. So yeah, I fancy Millwall. I think there'll be 34,000 Millwall fans at Wembley. They'll really roar them on, and I fancy Millwall to do it.
And also
there'll be a lot of fans as well. Right? I mean, they've got a big. Did you hear that the Bradford chairman, the owner, said that if they reach the Premier League, obviously they're trying to get in the Championship at the moment, he would charge £1 to go to each game. How brilliant is that? I mean, it's quite a nice idea. He said we don't need the money because it's getting it from television, but that's the same with every Premier League club, and they don't reduce their prices. I can guarantee you that.
No,
nice idea there.
That's such a fun, fantastic. I did read that Uwe Rosler, the Fleetwood boss, who lost in the semi-final, he was saying that because of the injuries and that there wasn't much rotation in the squad and the players were very tired. It's interesting to make that point when, you know, we're talking about the Championship playoffs and saying that, you know, Fulham, because they've got the momentum and that, it's the other way around.
I think there are... when I interviewed Neil Arley, he told me that last season, Appleton stand me, because they got so close, they had to play every game right up to the end of the last game and they got knocked out in the last minute. And they, he said they were physically shattered and they were psychologically damaged as well. And he sort of knew that Wimbledon were going to win that semi-final. And he's not one of those, you know, garrulous, gobby guys. He is very astute. I sort of agree with him. He sort of knew that they'd run out of puff, and it's what happened in both legs, because AFC Wimbledon scored very late in their home leg, and then they were 2-0 down in the second leg, and they got back 2-1 and then got the 2-2 to get them through. So I sort of tend to agree that a team that hadn't rested players could run out of steam. 46 games, a lot. You know, it's a hard slog, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Just to finish, I just want to mention the League Two playoffs. Blackpool play Luton and Carlisle play Exeter. But I know Carlisle beat, they've been in poor form lately, but they beat Exeter to secure their playoff spot in the last day. Do you think winning that game on the final day of the season will make a big difference to the semi-final?
Well, it's so close, isn't it? Because it was the last league game and they had to probably win it to get into the playoffs. So, possibly. I mean, I've heard, you know, again, I'm going on sort of what I hear rather than seeing, but I know the Carlisle are a pretty functional team under Curl, with Exeter have got a lot of young players and have done an amazing job. I mean, Paul Tisdale, considering he's been there over 10 years, has done a pretty incredible job. This is the first time Exeter have ever been in the Football League playoffs. But and he's been there over 10 years. I mean, Orient have probably had 50 managers in that time. I think... I would predict that Exeter are going to get through that one, and I'm thinking Luton are going to beat Blackpool. I think Luton are the best team of that four. But I mean, what an incredible, insane race that was at the end there. So yeah, I think it was 7 teams were still vying for playoff places up to the last moment.
Yeah,
and you know, I think all 7 of them were probably in the playoffs at one stage on the last day of the season. So you know, they've all been through it. I think Blackpool obviously have the greatest record of any team in the playoffs because they're the only club out of 97 to have won all three divisional playoffs, and they've won it 4 times. They've been in 6 finals, so you know they have. You know, and again, Blackpool are a team who've got not such great owners, but they've shown, even though their fans, you know, being protesting against the owners continuously and, you know, boycotting matches, it shows that the team can still turn it on, even though the background music's not so great.
I think Luton deserve a lot. I think Luton's a massive club, massive supporters base. If nice they could get promoted again, back up to League One. Exeter, similar to me, they've got some great supporters there as well. Very good young team. Paul Tisdale, well, every year he just seems to do a great job with that football club. And they're very good at bringing through players as well. It's a very good young team there. Carlisle's done a very good job all season, and he's as I say, he's done well, and I keep Cole as a manager as well, so I think they've got all of these teams, they've all got a Blackpool and their supporters suffer as well. That'd be nice for them to have their day out of Wembley, but as I say, they've all got reasons why they should go up, but I think my pick would be Luton. I think they'll just have the edge of quality in the playoffs.
Alright, well, just to be different, I'll say that I think Blackpool will make it, you know, just scraping on the last day. Obviously, it was a great last day, as Richard mentioned. Colchester and Wickham also winning their games, but not quite making it. I think because Blackpool have just scraped in, I think they'll win it. And they've been in great form lately as well. So that brings us to the end of the show. You can follow us on Twitter at V2Football and check out our website, v2football.com. Also, check out Richard Foster. It's at RC Foster. And he's also got the playoffs Twitter account, as he's mentioned earlier in the show. And you can check out his book, 30 Years of the Playoffs, The Agony and the Ecstasy, History of Playoffs, which is out today, as he's mentioned earlier in the show. Thanks for listening. It's good night from me and good night from Nick Davey and Richard Foster.
It's a pleasure.
Good night.
Cheers, bye.